We're so pleased to welcome here in studio, live and in person, Kelly Eisner, the Director of Communications for the American Red Cross. We've chatted virtually, Kelly, for the past year and a half or so, so it's great to see you.
It's so great to see that you still have arms and legs and a body to go with it.
We're really in 3D. We're not two-dimensional.
I know.
Staring at screen. We're going to shut all the screens off, I think.
Exactly. I'm good with screens for a couple years.
I want to thank you publicly for keeping us up to date during the height of the pandemic virtually over Zoom like so many people did, just to let folks know how the Red Cross was doing and the needs, but it's great to have you back.
Well, and I want to thank you for giving us the chance to be able to talk directly to our audiences. It really makes all the difference. People, you know, the Red Cross does provide these services. We've stepped it up during the pandemic, but we can't do it in a vacuum. People need to know that we're out there and how to reach us, so thank you.
You're welcome. It's our pleasure. It's been a team effort here at QATV to keep the community connected, for sure, because the need for blood has really not decreased at all, right?
It's true, and actually, we've seen in the last several weeks a critical need, even a shortage in some cases. A lot of it is, you know, everything, I think, in the last year in our new world dates back to COVID in some way.
Yeah.
And what we're seeing is that, you know, as hospitals resumed elective surgeries, things that have been put off during the pandemic, or people who maybe didn't feel comfortable leaving their houses, there were a lot of reasons that blood supply started to dip. And at the same time, when the demand goes up, we really found ourselves, and all the blood collection agencies in this country found themselves in a situation where there was a critical shortage of blood. I'm happy to say, are just now starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel, but the need is still critical.
Okay.
So, you know, we have a saying, like, we don't want to take our foot off the gas quite yet, and that's definitely true. So, you know, for people that are hearing this, getting out there, making an appointment, giving blood when you're able to, and making the next appointment and the one after that really does make a difference.
It was like a perfect storm, right? It was,
you
know, the need was going up. People were afraid to go to give blood, though, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, there's so many conflicting messages throughout it. I mean, you're hearing, okay, well, let's not leave our house. But thankfully, you know, Governor Baker came on and said publicly that, yes, giving blood is considered an essential service. And
right.
We did see a response to that. And, you know, I'm always so impressed with the blood donors who have been doing this for years, and they're not letting a pandemic stop them from coming out. This time they're masked and, you know, they're staying farther away, but they're still there and they're making that life-saving gift.
And the volunteers who are running the drives.
Absolutely.
Also, I mean, you talk about first responders,
Even
though they're right there on the front lines too.
It's so true.
Yeah.
We rely on our volunteers for everything from just that friendly face when you're when you walk into a blood drive, for, you know, just answering questions like, do I need to wear this mask? The answer is yes, indoors.
Yes.
But, you know, how long is the wait going to be? What do I need to know? What are they going to ask me about my vaccine? Our volunteers are they're the first step at every blood drive. And our, you know, I can't neglect the fact that our volunteers are out there providing 24/7 emergency disaster relief, a home fire, bottles of water. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many different ways that volunteers really make the Red Cross mission possible.
Yeah. So what does giving blood to the Red Cross during a pandemic look like, Kelly? You know, what are the actual requirements?
Well, the biggest one, and this is a change that takes effect fully on Monday, is that we are going to go back to requiring masks for all donors, even if they're vaccinated.
Okay.
Even fully vaccinated, we are going to ask you to wear a mask indoors at all times. And the same will go for our staff and volunteers as well. They will wear masks at all times. You know, we're in this situation where with the Delta variant, you know, cases are surging. And I mean, even if you're in one community, like, you know, with Norfolk County, there may be a moderate transmission level, whereas Plymouth County, it's substantial. So
the virus doesn't say, oh, it's Norfolk County, I can't go there.
Exactly, 100%. So that's why we have this consistent policy.
Okay.
So every blood drive across the U.S., regardless of vaccination status, you will need to be masked for the safety of our donors and our staff.
Okay, but not required to be vaccinated then? That's not a requirement?
Okay. You can donate blood if you're vaccinated. Okay. We do ask that you remember the name. Like if you got the Pfizer, just remember that, commit that to memory, because you'll be asked about that.
Okay.
But the vaccine will not... the most common vaccines, at least, will not defer you from donating blood. I think there are some, I've heard of some, like, clinical trials for like different kinds of vaccinations, that you'll need to discuss with someone, mm-hmm. but like Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, AstraZeneca, none of those will defer you from donating blood.
Okay. What if you have had COVID? Can you still donate blood?
You can still donate. Obviously, you have to be symptom-free.
Okay.
And just with any kind of health condition, you want to make sure that you're feeling well the day of the blood drive as well.
Okay.
We do those little mini physicals. But yes, patients who have recovered from COVID are still eligible to donate blood.
Okay.
And in some cases, it's actually the antibodies that your body created when you fought off COVID live in the plasma that's in your blood. So those can actually be separated and pooled into what we call a convalescent plasma donation. So in some cases, you're actually helping to help the next round of people fight
yeah.
the disease as
okay.
well.
Okay. Well, we're still learning so much about COVID, you know, every day it seems like there's new information.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I am wishing I paid more attention in high school biology.
What about platelets? Is there any change to platelet donations?
There is always a need for platelet okay. donations as well. What makes that a little bit different is that platelets, unlike red blood cells, platelets mm-hmm. can't be frozen. So they have a shelf life of about 5 days. So almost as soon as they come out, they're going out to patients. Platelets are used, more than half of what the Red Cross collects is used for cancer treatments, for people recovering their immune systems, things like that. So there's a huge demand for them. And again, they can't be stockpiled at all.
Okay.
So yes, always a need. And it's a little, you know, it's a little different kind of a donation. It can only be done at a Red Cross brick and mortar center.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
So like for here, we would go to Weymouth.
Gotcha.
That's our nearest platelet donation center.
Okay. All right. Good to know. And timeline-wise, can folks still donate the same amount of time as they would blood?
Actually, with platelets, you can donate every 7 days.
Oh.
Blood, you have to wait 56 days
okay.
for red blood cells, what we would call a whole blood donation. But platelets can be given every 7 days.
Hmm. Okay. And any age restrictions at all on donors?
Everyone has to be at least 16.
Okay.
In some states, it's 17.
Mm-hmm.
And there are height and weight restrictions as well. They vary from gender to gender. But yeah, it's a wider pool of people than
yeah.
you might think. There's not as many restrictions, I think, with donating blood as people tend to think there are.
Okay, so. Good to know. Now, you're just recently coming off. There were some incentives that the Red
yes.
Cross offered for folks to donate. How did that go?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a great thank you, and we do always see a turnout, but I think what I've noticed going to blood drives and talking to donors is that the incentives are great. They're a thank you gift, but really people come out of the goodness of their heart.
Sure, yeah.
Doesn't mean we're going to stop giving
them. Of course.
You know, we want to say thank you. So right now, actually, if you donate between August 1st and 15th, you can receive a four-month special offer to Apple Music for
oh.
new subscribers. And we're also in the midst of a promotion where you can be entered to win tickets to the Bonnaroo Music Festival.
Oh, no kidding.
Okay. So that one's pretty cool. And there's if you go on redcrossblood.org, you'll be able to navigate to the site that has all the details and the fine print about
all the
that.
Fun stuff.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Where our lawyers live.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of, 9/11 is not far off.
Absolutely. And 20 years.
It's hard to believe. Yeah.
You know, I heard the mayor speaking about that earlier.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so the Red Cross is doing this is a blood drive that we've done every year since 2002
wow.
At Fenway Park. It's one of our largest events.
So it started the year after 9/11 then?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And you would not believe the turnout.
Is that right?
It was incredible. I think the collection total was somewhere in the range of 1,200 units of blood, which is just, I mean, when you think about it, in Massachusetts, we collect about an average. We need to collect about 300 units a day. So this is four times in one day.
One location.
What we would collect in
wow.
the whole state. So this year, obviously, with COVID and coming out of this pandemic, it's a much smaller scale. You
okay.
know, we're looking to collect 250 units
okay.
of blood that day. And we strongly, strongly encourage appointments.
Okay.
But what's cool about it is that it's Fenway Park.
Right.
So,
yes.
you know, you can walk around, you see the field, and it's, you know, there's not masses of people, which is nice.
Is it right on the field?
Not, it's indoors.
Oh.
It's in, the main donation room is in the State Street Pavilion.
Oh, okay.
And then there are some of the satellite locations just for overflow. The Red Sox are so generous with donating this space. We've got a lot of buy-in from the city of Boston, from the state of Massachusetts. Several corporate sponsors are involved in this blood drive as well. So it really is just, it's such a powerful day of service, you know, because that's, you know, when we think about 9/11, that's what remains for me, is that it's become just this day to do something, to give back. Giving blood is one way to do that. Volunteering is another way. You know, and there's, those are aspects that, if that's something you're interested in doing, the Red Cross can definitely help you out.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. But I'm assuming that at Fenway Park on 9/11, a lot of first responders come out, because obviously that community was just devastated during that tragedy.
And showed their heroism in ways that you would never expect. And we, what's interesting is we always, they're thanking us, but really, no, this is supposed to be a tribute to the brave men and women who ran into the flames and into the building collapse. And, you know, we've seen it in other instances since then as well.
Yes, and I know a lot of folks from the Boston area in that profession went to New York and to Pennsylvania and the Pentagon on that day and the days afterwards to assist. So there's a strong connection there.
It was. Yep. And Boston, obviously, you know, two of the four planes took off from Logan Airport.
Right.
So there's unfortunately still a very poignant connection to our area.
Absolutely. Yeah. So again, right on Saturday, 9/11.
Yes.
At Fenway Park.
And it opens at 8 to 3.
Oh, okay.
So you can make appointments at redcrossblood.org. I would encourage appointments, especially for this one.
Okay.
Just because when, you know, it's one that will probably get a lot of walk-ins as well. So we want to make sure that people, if they have an appointment, we can kind of make sure that you're taken care of.
Okay. Volunteers, you just mentioned,
absolutely.
All kinds of opportunities, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So I know that you've heard the news, and I'm sure most people listening have, that this hurricane season, hurricane, wildfire, natural disaster season is predicted to be just above average and incredibly destructive. So what the Red Cross is doing right now is we are looking for volunteers who are interested in training up specifically in the areas that we would call mass care. So that's sheltering, feeding, the things that would come with a big national disaster.
Okay.
You may not think of it as, like when we talk about Hurricane Harvey, you may not think of that as a Massachusetts story, but so many of our Red Crossers from Massachusetts were deployed to those disasters. It happens, we have people right now out west responding to the wildfires.
Okay.
You know, it's because the geography where it happens, everyone there is already all hands on deck, but they need more help. So they reach out to areas like Massachusetts to provide additional volunteers.
Okay.
And what's interesting is that we provide all the training, and you can take whatever areas of training really interest you. So if you want more of a leadership position where you're going to be supervising other volunteers, in some cases a volunteer might be supervising a staff member. Those are positions that are available. I always say that it's a great chance to kind of learn how to, you know, you can develop sort of the soft skills that might help in everyday work.
True, yeah.
It's
communication skills, organization skills.
Absolutely.
Writing, you know, prioritizing, the things you wouldn't even think of,
And it, you know, it's a really, I don't want to use the word good experience, in that we would rather there were no disasters.
Of course, right.
But you do get that instant gratification of being able to see this horrible thing and go and help someone. You know, if there's a person that needs a blanket, you can hand it to them. If they needed a bottle of water, you can give it to them. And it really is just a powerfully rewarding experience.
Yeah, we were talking about this, but I know before the show that you know, folks, when things like that happen, want to do something.
Exactly.
But they feel it's just so overwhelming that, what can I do as one person? Here's what you can do.
Here's exactly what you can do. Yeah. And we'll tell you how to, we'll show you how to do it.
Yeah.
And
hopefully you never need it.
Yes, exactly.
Right?
And the other area that you can help right in your own community is with what we call our local disaster action team. Our nickname for it is DAT.
Okay.
But these are the people that respond 24/7 to local emergencies as well. That's primarily house fires, but it could be flooding, power outages, winter storms. And there's a great need right now for people to train up in those skills as well. It's a pretty low barrier of entry for the training that you need. You have to take a couple classes, but you know, you get to, as you're taking these classes, you get to meet other people on the team and kind of learn from their experiences too. I've actually been doing some of these trainings myself, and I'm so impressed with the depth of experience that, you know, we have volunteers that have been with the Red Cross for 40 years,
wow.
and they have seen some things.
I bet, yeah.
And to be in that kind of forum where they can say, well, this is what you can really expect, mm-hmm. it really adds some nice color to the kind of by-the-book trainings
yeah.
that we do as well.
Is there an actual training center that the Red Cross has, or how does the actual training work, Kelly?
Well, you know, if you had asked me that in, say, 2018, yeah. I would have been able to say that, yes, most of our trainings are led by an instructor. Obviously, we had to change that during the pandemic.
Yeah.
We shifted a lot more to virtual trainings.
Okay.
Now, what we're seeing is it's kind of going back to a blend. We're starting to be able to do some instructor-led trainings again, but there is a huge library of virtual classes as well.
Okay.
So it's sort of a mix.
Okay. All right, depending on what you want to learn, right?
I guess. Exactly.
Yeah.
And a lot of what's fun about the virtual ones is that you might be in a class with, you know, a volunteer in Oklahoma mm. and someone that's in Oregon.
Okay.
You know, and here we are in Massachusetts.
Yeah. You wouldn't get that in an in-person event. So,
exactly.
So that's a different aspect to it. Who can be a volunteer?
You know, depending on the volunteer position, really anybody.
Okay.
We have a highly active youth volunteer, anyone under 18. Mm. We have youth opportunities. There's no upper age limit.
Okay.
You know, if you're retired, if you have some physical restrictions, we can find positions that can work within those limitations. You know, and I also always mention that a lot of employers are willing to work with the Red Cross for time off, for leave, so that you don't necessarily, if there is a national deployment, you know, there, it doesn't mean that just because you're working a 40-hour work week that you can't still volunteer.
Is there a minimum commitment that a volunteer has to make?
No, I mean, okay. we encourage people to commit to a couple hours a week or just on a regular basis.
Okay.
And the way we try to make that happen is to have sort of what we would call blue sky roles and gray sky roles.
Hmm.
So even when we're not in the midst of an actual disaster, things that you can do kind of part of the planning process, you know, making sure that our supplies are up to date and inventory if it's in a mass care role, or again, some of these disaster action team, they're kind of always responding to things, and that can be as much or as little as you want to give. The Red Cross never says, hey, you must give us X number of hours.
Okay.
Although we do find that the volunteers who are the most engaged continue to take shifts.
Sure,
They
like it.
Yes,
that's what they want
exactly.
to do, right?
Exactly. And we hope it's a good experience because it's so incredibly needed.
And you don't have to travel if you don't want to, right?
Nope.
It's all
that's
you.
All voluntary.
Yeah. Okay.
You can travel. We call it raising your hand.
instead of running to the back of the room.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. There's a way, we use a big computer system, and there's a way you can kind of say, well, if travel is needed, I'm available from this date to this date.
Gotcha.
And then if we need you, we'll call you. You can always say no.
Okay.
But yeah, it's, we try to be as flexible as possible and recognize that people are giving of their time.
So does the Red Cross pay the expenses, the travel expenses?
We usually arrange for travel.
Okay.
Yep. And it would not fall to a volunteer to pay their own way. But it might depend on where it is, where you're going, if there's virtual opportunities. That all is spoken over, and we would never commit you to some kind of financial thing without, you know. Yeah, no. I mean, we're
not going to leave you out there in the lurch.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, we do pay travel expenses.
Yeah. Okay. So if somebody, say, here in Quincy wanted to volunteer and say, I'd like to be able to help out if a hurricane hits, or,
absolutely.
You know, if there's a major fire or building collapse or something, can they actually pick and choose that's where they want to volunteer?
Yes, we, especially for our disaster action teams, we try to keep those deployments as local as possible. If you're going out, you know, it's our chapters, so we have a northeast chapter, a southeast.
Oh, okay, all right.
So, and you know, our central and west chapter, we have a greater Boston chapter.
Okay.
Which Quincy would fall into our greater Boston chapter.
Oh,
so
okay.
We try to keep the geography pretty limited. It's functional too. I mean, we're gonna have a much better response if we're sending Quincy residents to a Quincy fire.
Faster and better,
yes,
yeah, they
exactly.
know the area, they know the people, right.
Exactly, and that's a big part of it. You know, we have such a great partnership with the Quincy Fire fire department. Mm-hmm. And, you know, part of what we do, when I talked a little bit about these blue sky roles, you know, we do a lot of fire safety preparedness education.
Yep.
And that's for all ages. We have programs that are geared towards children. We have programs that are geared towards adults, homeowners versus renters.
Sure.
So, you know, being able to offer those classes on a voluntary basis within Quincy, then if you are called to a fire, you might actually know the people that were already
right.
involved.
Redcross.org, 1-800-RED-CROSS, redcrossblood.org,
yes.
redcross.org/mass.
Yep.
All those
slash
areas. Thanks so much, Kelly.
Thank you.
You're welcome. It's great to see you.
It's great to see you.
We'll have you back in person. I know.